clear. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today, myself and Jay will look back on yesterday's disappointing 2-0 defeat against Livingston. We'll preview Wednesday's clash with Celtic, next Saturday's clash with Hearts, and we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next half an hour or so. Jay, welcome along.
Cheers.
Well, after the highs of last week's podcast, we're back down to earth with a bump again. Absolutely dire 2-0 defeat against Livingston yesterday. Not a great deal in the game, it must be said. A poor spectacle. Two goals conceded from set plays. A great save from Mark Gillespie, actually, before the first Livingston goal from Stevie Lawless. Just really, really abject. I can't quite fathom how a team with only one change in personnel went from defeating Aberdeen 3-0 to losing so pathetically yesterday. The manager seems to have the same dilemma. He can't work out why this has happened either. Jay, from the delight of the Aberdeen performance and how unexpected it was, this was just a return to type. I know we can say, well, the results have been a bit better in recent weeks, but that level of performance is just so unacceptable. A good number of Motherwell fans made the journey yesterday. They were charged £24 for the privilege. I've seen just another dreadful display.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird. We seem to be becoming, it almost seems to be becoming our kind of trademark, the fact that, you know, even last season, for as good as we were in the Cups, and obviously, where we ended up in the league come the end of the season was decent, but you had those games throughout the season where when we were bad, we were just really, really bad. It just seems to be something about the Motherwell side of this season and the previous season that just seems to have really, really abject performances in the locker. And you can't really tell when those are going to be pulled out. Obviously, I'm speaking more generally because I was a late call off yesterday through injury. So obviously you'll know more about the actual game itself yesterday than me. But, you know, it just sounds a lot like what we've heard before. And it is concerning when your manager's talking about how, you know, it can't be explained. That's not necessarily a criticism about Robinson, but I think there is questions need to be asked about certain players. You know, I think I completely understand that Stephen Robinson is in charge of team selection, recruitment, etc., etc. He, you know, gets the team focused. He gives, you know, he tells them their jobs. He sends them out. But I've not really, you know, from not being at the game, from what Robinson has said before and after the game, from what the players were saying before and after the game, the fact that the team selection, I think every Motherwell fan on the planet would have been happy with it. You know, we kept the same team that dismantled Aberdeen with the one required change, and I think everybody would have been calling for Barry Maguire to be in there ahead of Donnelly. So I think everybody would have turned up thinking, yep, Robinson's got it spot on. And yet to kind of put in that kind of performance, I think questions need to start being asked about players. You know, the buck stops with Robinson. I'm not suggesting for a second it doesn't. Managers are judged on results and that kind of thing. And, you know, if things were to go back downhill, it would be Robinson who would get a lot of the flack. But I do think at times, it's worth looking at certain players, because the same players who put in that performance against Aberdeen, and you can talk all day about, you know, or being inconsistent and things like that, but there's a level of performance. You know, being inconsistent is maybe going one week and, you know, having a great game, then the next week, you know, doing the basics right, but not reaching that level again. But, you know, yesterday sounds like, from everything I've read, from everything I've seen, from speaking to you and other guys who were there, it sounds as though we weren't even doing the basics. And that's simple stuff. You shouldn't be earning a wage at a top flight football club if you cannot do the basics correctly. And so I think I've got a little bit of sympathy for Stephen Robinson. And again, it might be because I wasn't there, and so I don't have the emotion of being through that 90 minutes and witnessing what you would have witnessed. But I do have a level of sympathy for Stephen Robinson at times like this, because he has done, in my opinion, everything correctly. By all accounts, you know, the players were working on everything that Livy would throw at them. You know, they were training AstroTurf all week. It was the same team that every Motherwell fan would have picked, and yet they put in a performance that just isn't acceptable. And I think for me, you know, the Bucks land, you know, rest with a lot of players in that regard.
See, I'm becoming a little bit of a broken record here, but I witnessed the performance, obviously, and I'm struggling because I'm going back to type here with not being that arsed. There was nothing happened in the game. It wasn't as if Livingston absolutely peppered their goal or anything like that. They just were better all over the pitch. They were hungrier all over the pitch. My issue is we quite often reference the fact that we're operating in a shoestring budget. We'll go on to figures a wee bit later on with the release of this year's accounts. But the situation for me was Livingston were just... I've got the lowest budget in the league, but they did the basics so much better than we did. What Stephen Robinson refers to as the free stuff, that working a wee bit harder, or you know what I mean? Like I'm trying to think of other examples of working a wee bit harder, but that's a key one, obviously. And Livy were just, they were more streetwise as well, which kind of took me a wee bit aback, because we've been quite renowned for being up and at them, and we do know how to kind of win games in various different guises, but we just never ever looked threatening yesterday. Barry Maguire had a decent chance. Their goalkeeper made a great save from just before the second goal, but it just never felt like, even at 1-0, that we knew our way back into the game. He made his changes quite early on. Gael Big-Romana, again, substituted at half-time. Lost his man for the first goal, and I think he's been a wee bit hung out to dry again with the comments post-match, where Robinson refers to Alex Rodriguez-Garin as someone that does the dirty work as well as does the nice stuff, and you think that's a direct reference to Gael Big-Romana, where he doesn't think puts in enough legwork in the defensive element of the game. I'm just really quite... I'm nonplussed about it. I didn't expect that turnaround in performance, but by the same token, I didn't think that even in beating Aberdeen last week, we had turned a corner massively.
Yeah, I mean, again, having not been there, I can kind of still grasp the kind of level of performance you're talking about. You know, I think I've kind of tried to put it across a couple of times on the podcast, and that, you know, previously when we've had those performances, when it's not so much a terrible performance, it's a nothing performance. We seem to have, you know, somehow managed to carve out this unique way of playing on certain days, when it's almost as though, you know, we just don't exist. You know, there's no effort levels. There's no there's no performance. And by all accounts,
and that's a bollock as well, when you're actually having to spend 45 minutes analysing that afterwards. We're making it very difficult for us to continue this podcast.
Well, that's what I was going to say as well. That kind of ties in. I think that ties into your kind of the idea of feeling, you know, that apathy that surrounds it. Because I think when you come away, you know, football's an emotional game, but when you go to the games, you're expecting, you know, emotion and passion. Now, that passion might come because you've seen a terrible performance. You know, I don't necessarily agree with people who go to games and shout at players and all that kind of thing, but they're at least showing passion and they're being emotional. And so when they go home, they're probably not feeling apathy as such. They're probably feeling angry, they're feeling frustrated, and so there's still emotions there. I think when you're witnessing a nothing performance, and there's really no other way to explain it, and I've tried in the past of the podcast, but we've seen it a good few times, it's just a non-existent performance. I think that ties in with the apathy, because you're then not responding emotionally or passionately to anything that's going on in the park. You're just witnessing, you know, football is just kind of happening in front of you, and there's nothing to react to. And I think that's unique. You know, you go back to even teams that were really, really poor, you know, like the Morris Malpass side. That Morris Malpass side was just absolutely honking. They would go and just be absolutely shit and then get beat. And then you'd be raging, you'd be shouting at Malpass, you'd be shouting at, you know, Paul Keegan or whoever, and you would still feel an emotional response to what was happening. Whereas this team just seems capable of performances where nothing happens and folk turn up, sit through the game, then go up the road and go out for a couple of beers, and then, like you and Buster said last week, you know, just become pretty, you know, nonplussed about the whole thing. And that's worrying, because then you start to wonder, well, is that the same situation with the players? Because by all accounts, you know, we're still supposed to be bringing in guys who we analyse their social media and we make sure they're the right characters. The right characters, you know, the guys with the right mentality aren't going to go into games and not do the so-called free stuff. They're not going to not do the basics. They're not going to not be up for it. So the performances we're kind of seeing from this side at times kind of flies in the face of that idea of having a team of battlers, a team of guys who, even when the chips are down or even when things aren't going right, will still get the sleeves rolled up and get stuck in. That just doesn't seem to happen. And, you know, it's a strange one.
Well, we discussed this last night, but for me, excuse me, I'm really struggling with my throat here. But we talked about the due diligence done in players and their social media accounts and their personalities, etc., etc. And for me, the one person that has been brought in that shows quite a good attitude is Tom Aldred. And he's the one that we're led to believe by Bury fans has got the most stinking attitude in football. So it's quite strange the way that a few of them carry themselves. I thought all three that were put in front of the camera after the game yesterday spoke well. They demonstrated that they were hurting. I actually did a bit with Danny Johnson this morning for the programme on Wednesday night, and he clearly still was very much feeling the effects of yesterday's defeat. But the 90 minutes do more talking than you can do before or after a match. What you say before a game, particularly, you've got to back it up with what happens on the pitch. And far too often this season, we're not. And I think that's maybe why the media team got a wee bit of flack, or the half had a wee bit of flack recently as well, because we put out a lot of good stuff. We've got players that are willing to talk, particularly before games. But when things don't go so well on the pitch, it can work against you in some ways. You can have all this great content, but the bread and butter is the football, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, it's the media team for a football team. So if things aren't going well with the football team, you know, your media team is going to struggle with the output, because football fans, by our very nature, are fickle. You just need to compare this podcast to last week's to kind of see that. So when the media team is putting stuff out that's positive or reflected well on the team, but the team aren't doing it on the pitch, then instantly there's, you know, negative comments, and, you know, you maybe feel as though you're being a bit patronised, or, you know, that kind of thing. So they do have a difficult job. But, you know, just back in terms of, you know, something we've obviously spoke about, particularly last week of the podcast as well, you know, the idea of Carroll McHugh being a bit of a hothead. I would imagine that, you know, I think I'd seen a lot on social media and forums about how maybe Peter Hartley hasn't really cut it since he came back from injury and should maybe sit out. The problem you've actually got is, I think yesterday, again, having not been there, but just trying to, you know, maybe even play devil's advocate, but, you know, for as much as those two guys could possibly be liabilities at times, they are the two guys who will get stuck in, who, when, you know, if things aren't happening, will still, you know, put in that passion and do something that might get the crowd going. Whereas the rest of the team perhaps don't. And I think that might have been, you know, an issue as well, because sometimes it's just a spark that's required. I'm not suggesting that Carroll McHugh going out and doing somebody, getting a yellow card, then immediately doing somebody 2 seconds later is beneficial to the team. But just sometimes something like that can maybe get, you know, kickstart things, get folk a bit more interested, because it's, you know, even just looking at the stats, and I hate stats because, you know, they don't tell you a great deal about the game, but I just, you know, obviously having not been there yesterday, I wanted to kind of have a wee look at certain things before doing this. And, you know, the stats are pretty embarrassing as well. You know, when you talk about a team, they've started the season well, but they've slipped away recently. You know, they've got the tiniest budget in the division, and yet the stats, they've just absolutely hammered us. And again, you know, it's not the full story of the match usually, but the way you're talking and the way I've read online, it seems as though it absolutely is. And so I just don't really know where you go from there. You know, last week we're sitting talking about how we've got this really, really difficult month of fixtures. It's going to be really difficult to see where points are coming from. And yet, you know, you've just beaten Aberdeen, you're going to Livy, you're back up on top, you know, you're coasting again. The team should be full of confidence. And then they pull out a performance like they did yesterday. It just, it almost defies logic because, you know, you could have went there, you could have put in, you know, got the sleeves rolled up, got stuck in. Things might not have went for you. Maybe, you know, maybe overhitting a couple of passes or missing a couple of chances. That happens in football. We know we've not got the biggest budgets, so we've not got the greatest players. So, you know, things, players are going to make mistakes. But when you're going and you're putting in, you know, what sounds like the complete opposite of a performance from last week, despite having, you know, 10 out of the 11 players on the park, it just makes very little sense. And again, it's where I kind of see a little bit, or I have a little bit of sympathy to Stephen Robinson, because I just don't know what you would say to that team after the game. You know, as far as I can see, we've done everything you would want us to do in preparation for that game. Pick the team that you want, send them out, expecting at least similar effort levels and similar performance levels from the Aberdeen game, and then wait and see what happens. I just don't know what you would say to that team.
Right, we'll finish up in the Livingston game then, and something I did see, which I thought was quite ridiculous, and I don't normally kind of seek out tweets and then slate them on the podcast. That seems a bit ridiculous, but Andrew Wilson, former director at the club, I mean, it was perhaps the worst Motherwell performance he had ever seen yesterday. Now, you weren't at the game, so I'll kind of I think we've covered pretty much how it went, and it wasn't great, don't get me wrong, but wow, that is quite a statement. That wasn't even the worst performance we've had this season. And Andrew Wilson, I wouldn't hazard a guess at the man's age, maybe in his early 50s. That's certainly, he must have seen a lot more games than me and a lot more terrible games than me. So it's amazing the kind of contrast in emotions that people can feel after watching a game. I'm not saying that he's wrong. I think he is, but that's my opinion. He's got his own one, obviously. Surely we're not going to get that knee-jerk that we beat Aberdeen and suddenly we're the best team in the world, and then we lose to Livingston and we're the worst Motherwell team ever. I think there needs to be a wee bit of a reality check somewhere in between here. Stephen Robinson mentions the budget a lot. I get very frustrated when he does do that. But we've got to realise that there is a kind of upper echelon in the league just now, where there's five or six teams that are much stronger than the bottom six. That maybe doesn't show in the table just now because you've got Livingston in the top six and you've got Hibs. We could have went within 2 points of Hibs, and I couldn't believe quite how badly Hibs are struggling just now. But the reality of it is, got a wee bit of common sense here. We're struggling, things aren't going great. But when you get a kind of more high-profile supporter coming out with stuff like that, it doesn't really sit that well with me. I just think that you maybe sit back and analyse it a wee bit more properly than that. To come away and describe it as one of the worst ever, I don't think it's our worst performance ever at Livingston. Never mind the worst performance of a Motherwell team ever, but there we go. I don't know what you're taking.
Well, I just I kind of just feel, again, I don't know whether it's just maybe looking more into things, you know, I don't know this season, but, you know, it almost feels, you know, you've also got the Colin O'Neill stuff as well, and it almost feels as though, and I know this might even sound hypocritical because we come on the podcast some weeks and absolutely, you know, are very critical and things like that, but it almost feels as though it's the in thing for high pro or so-called high profile fans to maybe have a dig at the team this season. You know, Andrew Wilson, Colin O'Neill. Wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's one or two others by the end of the season. I just think, you know, I think back to, you know, the likes of that Morris Malpass season, and it might be wide of the mark here, but I don't remember, you know, 91 cup winners or, you know, directors or former directors coming out and slating the team. It just was what it was, you know. We get beat at games, the fans had their say about Malpass, and they eventually went. Whereas this season, it almost feels like it's the in thing for Colin O'Neill, and, you know, this kind of idea that, you know, so-called high-profile fans will have a go. And I don't really get it. You know, when you'd mentioned that he'd said it was the worst performance that he'd ever seen yesterday, you know,
probably the worst performance. He didn't go as far as saying it definitely was.
Right. He's not worked it out.
Certainly, It certainly was quite an extreme reaction, whatever way you look at it.
I mean, again, though, I mean, as I said earlier, it's all about passion and stuff like that, I suppose, as well. You come up the road and you're possibly fuming about the performance and you kind of put something like that out there. But yeah, it seems weird. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you could argue, I mean, one of the worst performances I've seen was about 2 weeks ago at Ibrox. So, I mean, you know, it's that kind of season that we do seem to have that in it. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, regardless of whether Andrew Wilson's right or wrong, you know, we do have an absolutely shocking performance. You know, every, you know, three or four games, we have the ability to put in, you know, some of the worst performances you'll see, or some of the most non-existent performances you'll see. And that is something, that is a cause for concern, because it does mean that we go into these very difficult games with that against us, because we have the ability now to go in. You know, would it surprise anybody if we went into the Celtic, Hearts and St Johnstone games, for example, and put in good performances, or, you know, the effort levels were there, we were doing the free stuff, we were, you know, working hard and just not getting the results because we were up against better teams. And then we come up against, you know, a St Mirren or a Livy again and have an absolute shocker. I mean, it's certainly, you know, this is the kind of team that I could absolutely see that from. And that's something we really need to avoid, because if we're going to start having our good performances against the teams that are going to beat us anyway, but then save our stinkers for days like yesterday, then it's going to be a very, very difficult, you know, next few months.
And I'm just going to apologise on Jay's behalf for comparing Andrew Wilson and Colin O'Neill to each other there. But,
Sorry, Colin O'Neill's in a league of his own.
Very much so. We'll look ahead to Celtic on Wednesday night. And as I always kind of clarify, it's very hard to then go on and preview the game on the Saturday, because we don't know what happens on the Wednesday night. And that could obviously change the landscape quite considerably. You go and beat Celtic on Wednesday night, as unlikely as I think that is to happen, suddenly the Hearts game looks completely different. Hearts have got two games in between then as well. So a difficult one to preview the Hearts game. But the Celtic game is on the horizon. We don't know how they've got on in the League Cup final as we sit here 3 hours before kickoff, Jay. But there's no doubt about it. Celtic have really improved in the last couple of months. They're far and away, for me, the strongest team in the league. Last season, we did get two positive results in our home matches against them. We ran them close in the two cup finals. It's one that I find it hard to think that we're going to get anything given what happened yesterday. But I guess you never know. If we contain them early on, we maybe nick a goal, it could change the dynamic of the game. On the other hand, concede early, the mood could change inside Fir Park, and we could be in for a very, very long night.
Yeah, I think that about covers it. I mean, Celtic obviously started the season a little bit shakily. There was obviously a lot of kind of chat that maybe this was the year that, you know, somebody else could go on and mount a real challenge. But the last, you know, month or two, they've really, really turned it around. They're flying. You know, guys like James Forrest, you know, just different class at the moment. I think a lot of what will happen on Wednesday will possibly hinge on today's cup final. You know, you don't want to talk about, you know, knee-jerk reactions or, you know, wounded animals and all that kind of thing. But if Aberdeen were to go and win the cup today, then you could potentially see, you know, a very strong Celtic side out on Wednesday to take us to bits. Whereas if Celtic win the cup today, then, you know, do they possibly rest a few players on Wednesday? You know, it's difficult to kind of judge those things. What I would say is, you know, I would be looking for, you know, we've mentioned it a few times now, the basics, the hard work, that kind of thing. What you know, you mentioned Robbo calls the three things. That's all I'm really looking for on Wednesday. You know, a response in terms of effort levels, a response in terms of, you know, showing desire and passion and motivation, and let the game take care of itself. Because there's no point in, you know, pinning any hopes on it. If Celtic are in the mood and turn up and play the way they have multiple times this season, then they'll blow us out of the water, because they are just that good. They're an absolute mile ahead of anybody else in this division. But they can be beaten on their day. You know, other teams have shown that both last season and this one. So, you know, if you get a little bit of luck, who knows? But for me, I'd be letting the result and the actual performance itself, you know, take care of itself, but I'll be looking for some sort of response, because if we do go in and do that kind of non-existent performance, or, you know, as though we don't really want to be there, then, you know, it could really turn into, you know, possibly worse than the trip to Ibrox a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's it. You look at the result against Rangers earlier on in the season at Fir Park, and Rangers had a very tough time of it at Fir Park. Celtic obviously twice held to a draw at our place last season. But then on the other hand, only, what, 3 weeks ago, the 7-1 against Rangers. So I guess it's easy to say it's a game that could go either way. It's much more likely to go one way than it is the other. But I think being the last home game before a run of away fixtures, it's important to not be run over, not to be embarrassed. But on the other hand, again, this is a Celtic team that are capable of doing that to sides that are much better than ourselves. I look at the St Johnstone game at McDermott Park. St Johnstone were lucky to get nothing, and Celtic were unfortunate not to score more than six. So it's... Mm-hmm. As much as I say we've got to ensure we avoid getting run over, we don't really get much of a say in the matter. If Celtic are at full flow, then they could do it to any team in the league.
That's it. I mean, you know, you even just have to look at that. You know, it's not something that we didn't already know, but that league table that was doing the rounds earlier this week of the disparities in budget, you know, it's just incredible. Celtic are a million miles ahead of anybody else. And it obviously makes that a bit of a mockery when they greet about being so far behind teams in Europe. But yeah, the guys they've got are, you know, absolutely different class. If the way James Forrest is playing at the moment, if he turns up and is in the mood and plays to, you know, gets an 8 or a 9 out of 10, we'll probably lose the game. Same goes for guys like, you know, Tom Rogic and guys like that. You know, they're a class above. And it's not disappointing, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago that I'd be going into these games still a little bit, you know, confident of an upset. But I think, you know, at the moment, I just write these games off. I just don't see us getting anything from Wednesday in terms of a result. It's just important for me that we see some sort of bounce back. You know, everybody was full of praise, and quite rightly so, for the way we bounced back after Ibrox against Aberdeen. I don't see us doing quite the same. I don't see us going and beating Celtic on Wednesday, but I want to at least see it in the performance levels. If we go out with a mindset that, oh, well, it's a gimme, and it's all right for me to say this because I'm not a player. You know, I could sit here and say that I don't think we'll win, or I think we'll get hosted Wednesday, but the players can't. So the players need to go out there and actually show that they think they can get something from the game, show the desire that was missing yesterday, show the, you know, the ability to do the basics and to do those three things, and just give us something a little bit, you know, a little bit of performance levels again. If you do your best, if you go out there as a Motherwell player, do your best, keep things simple, do the basics, put in the effort, and you lose against Celtic because they're a million miles ahead, that's fine. We can all accept that. It's just when you're putting in levels of performance like you saw yesterday and like we've all seen over the last couple of years, I think that it really starts to grate on you. And we can't be doing that this month, because come the winter break, things could be back to being looking really bleak, depending on how this month goes.
And do you think the cup final and Celtic's European exploits as well? Obviously, they've played Thursday, they'll play today, and then they're playing Wednesday night. Is it the case that that could come into play? Or do they instead just have such a good and so much depth within their squad that they just put in another couple of fantastic players? Look on with great envy, it must be said, as they bring on the likes of Lee Griffiths or Scott Brown is eased back in. Whereas if that was any other team in the country, if Scott Brown was 70% fit, you'd be desperate to get him back in. If Lee Griffiths was asking for some time off to get his head right, you would get someone into the club immediately and try and brainwash him into playing. It's just, it is almost frightening, the resources they've got.
I think up to a point where I mean, all over the park in terms of the forward areas, so you're talking, you know, in midfield and up front, I think Celtic, you know, have match winners for a start. You know, even Ryan Christie, who I didn't mention, has, you know, taking his chance with both hands, both at international and club level.
Scott Sinclair, exactly. Completely different level now. He looks like a different player from the guy at Aberdeen last season.
Exactly. So you've got, you know, you've got forward players for Celtic, you know, in the midfield and forward areas, they're absolutely laden with resources. And if, you know, if somebody does pick up a knock today, they'll bring in, you know, if Edouard gets taken off today or isn't fit for Wednesday, in comes Griffiths, you know. So they have those players that could come in and are still a class above. Where I think you do maybe have a little bit of a chance is at the back for Celtic. I know Benkovic has come in and has looked decent. Boyata, you know, seems half decent again, but beyond that, they're not exactly rich for resources at the back. Lustig, at least in Europe, seems to be a bit of a weak link. And, you know, beyond Boyata and Benkovic, you're looking at who? Jack Hendry. I mean, Jack Hendry is never, you know, I can't believe Jack Hendry makes the Scotland squad. I can't believe Celtic paid $1.5 million for him. I'm not a Jack Hendry fan at all. So, you know, you might get lucky in that one of the defenders, you know, maybe picks up a wee niggle today or isn't fit, or it is just a case of resting them because they've got such a hectic schedule. And in comes Jack Hendry on Wednesday, and you might be able to, you know, force him in a mistake here or there. So there are, you know, it isn't, you know, from the full 11 for me isn't, you know, massively, you know, invincible. I think Brendan Rodgers has failed over the last 3 years to really strengthen the back of, you know, the defence for Celtic, something that's pretty evident every time they play in Europe. So there is little, you know, chinks of light in there. There is little bits you can exploit, but it remains to be seen what team we even face on Wednesday or whether, you know, things will rotate. But in terms of the forward areas, if guys like Christie, Forrest, Rogic, McGregor, you know, it's just an endless list. If guys like that turn up and don't allow you the chance, you know, they don't give you the ball long enough to actually go and you know, take advantage of Jack Hendry or whoever's at the back, then you've not really got much of a chance anyway.
We'll just finish up by talking about some key points from the last 7 days. The most significant one obviously being the release of the 2017-18 accounts. Motherwell announcing record profits for the year, obviously on the back of 2 cup finals, the sales of Louis Moult and Cedric Kiepre, very significant factors in that. It's obviously good news. There's still the debt to Les Hutchinson and John Boyle. That's still kind of a somewhat dark cloud, I guess, particularly issues with Les's debt. I saw a friend, Andrew Wilson, mention again that he believes that some of the debt was self-inflicted almost, and he would have thought by now that that would have been, well, maybe not written off completely, would have been a significant part of it would be written off. I know that given Les's double your money initiatives over the last 2 years, he certainly wants to help the club pay that money back very quickly. But I guess overriding emotion must be one of delight amongst the society and the football club and these very, very strong figures.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much I agree with Andrew Wilson's idea that, I mean, I would imagine, you know, by and large, unless we were expecting Les to come in and only cover, you know, the kind of the bills, you know, the Atleti bills at Fir Park and things like that, then, you know, some debt's going to be self-inflicted at any football club by its very nature. You know, if you get into debt to try and cover, you know, playing squad or whatever, then it's technically self-inflicted. So I'm not sure I buy that. I think that rather than focusing on the kind of the negative side of it, that, you know, the idea that, well, maybe we would have written it off by now, I think we should identify that, you know, the double your money thing is a massive, massive opportunity and it's a positive thing. Obviously, it was 1 year to begin with. That's extended to, you know, 2 years. Moving forward, don't know where that will go from there. But, you know, I think I would prefer to focus on the positives. Last season, the Welsh Society raised about £193,000. That was including the share sale at the end of the year, which raised a substantial amount towards that. Whereas this year, without the share sale included, the Welsh Society is currently on course to raise about £200,000. So things are on the up, not just in terms of the club's finances, but with the Welsh Society's finances as well. So if you're talking about by hog money, there might be, you know, about 400 grand written off Les's debt. I think that's something to be positive about rather than sort of picking bones over what is and isn't self-inflicted and things like that. I think, you know, I like a good heel turn. But I'm not sure I agree with Andrew Wilson's yesterday quite as much. But I think there's a lot still to be positive about. Yeah, you know, the fixture, the finances, you know, there are obviously special circumstances with the cup runs and things like that. But it's still something to be positive about. And we can continue to make profit and stuff like that if folk are given to the Welsh Society. It's as simple as that. The Welsh Society continues to invest in the club. And so those finances will continue to look rosy as long as Motherwell fans are invested in the Welsh Society.
Yeah, well, it's something we'll go into in more depth. We've had a few technical issues there, so we'll go into more depth next week. But certainly a great advert for fan ownership and a fantastic testimony to the guys behind the scenes at Fir Park and the guys at the top who have obviously helped steer the club towards such positive numbers. Just a final one and a much more light-hearted one, I guess. The debut of Chilly D during the week, another real success in terms of a viral video and really promoting the club. I'm not 100% sure, Jay, that he's got the X factor, but fair play to the media guys and obviously Charles Dunn as well for getting involved in that. I must say, it's not really to my taste, but it seems to be very popular nonetheless.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, things like that and the Peter Hartley, you know, signing video with the smashing piano and things like that. They are funny. That, you know, it's a good laugh. It gets Motherwell known on social media, but there is, you know, other aspects to it as well. I noticed on the website, it was actually Rico, who's been on the podcast recently, had shared on Twitter a link to the sort of proposal that the club are putting out to potential sponsors in terms of, you know, how the social media output or how the media team at Fir Park can get brands noticed, can get businesses noticed. So, you know, maybe not the Chilly D thing in particular, but when these videos go viral, it's not just, you know, about getting Charles Dunn interviewed on BBC Radio with Nick Grimshaw or about, you know, getting some likes on Twitter. There is a serious side to things like that. When the media job are doing their job and getting things like that on the go, it becomes more attractive to then sell the club to sponsors because sponsors see an opportunity to, you know, get their name or their logo in these viral videos. So it's all good, you know. Like yourself, it's not quite my thing in terms of the rap, but I would certainly say the Charles Dunn one was still far less cringeworthy than the actual original.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we'll wrap up for there. Another big week ahead. Hopefully we return next week in a more positive vein. It seems to be the kind of closing of every podcast. Either say, hope the positivity can keep up, or I hope we can turn this around. There's never really anything in between, but maybe we'll actually draw both games this week and that's what we'll be saying. Anyway, thank you very much for your time this morning, Jay.
No worries. Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Don't get responsibility, baby.